Younger, good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, August 22nd, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says his party is withdrawing its proposal for national dialogue after ZANU-PF spanned the opposition's initiative to bring major political parties in the country to the negotiating table.
The executive resolved to withdraw that call for dialogue to avert the crisis, but to now demand the implementation of agreed reforms that will ensure a free and fair and credible call.
A Chicago lobbyist, Prince Asael Ben Israel, is sentenced to 7 months in prison for allegedly trying to help President Robert Mugabe and his government push the United States to lift sanctions imposed on Harare.
It exposes Mugabe's, you know, dark side in terms of what money he managed to have to put aside for his personal, you know, spoiling, like he getting people to help him get off sanctions.
And President Robert Mugabe officially opens the 104th Harare Agricultural Show, calling for industrialization in the country and for factories to add value to produce.
A former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai today announced that his party is withdrawing its proposal for national dialogue after ZANU-PF has spanned the opposition's initiative to bring major political parties in the country to the negotiating table to discuss ways to address the problems facing the nation. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Addressing a news conference at his party's Harvest House headquarters today, MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai said ZANU-PF has shown no interest in the proposed dialogue to end the economic crisis in the country. ZANU-PF, in response to the MDCT's call for national dialogue, said Mr. Tsvangirai should first recognize President Robert Mugabe as the legitimate leader of Zimbabwe. The opposition leader maintains that last year's national elections were fundamentally flawed and therefore did not produce a legitimate result. Following the disputed elections, the prevailing economic crisis, and his party's withdrawal of its proposal, Mr. Tsvangirai said his MDC formation will not be working on alternatives on how to advance their reform agenda.
The executive resolved to withdraw that call for dialogue to avert the crisis, but to now demand the implementation of agreed reforms that will ensure a free and fair and credible poll.
The opposition leader said his party wants electoral reforms and threatened to boycott all future elections if its demands are not met.
The implementation of electoral and other attendant reforms, including transparent voters' roll, that will ensure a free and fair and credible poll whenever that election is going to be held.
Mr. Tsvangirai said the voters' roll should be timelessly availed to all political parties ahead of any future elections.
You can't run an election without a proper voters' roll. Mudede is priding himself that for him, the voters' roll is sacrosanct. It is something that is privy to ZANU-PF and ZANU-PF alone. We also have to accept that any reforms that have to be implemented have to be implemented to the satisfaction of all parties and not just one party.
He further claimed that his party now has fresh evidence of electoral fraud, saying the military was deployed to traditional leaders countrywide where all-night vigils were held in a bid to coerce people to vote for President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party. He also alleged that the Israeli company called Nikuv, that his party accuses of being used by ZANU-PF to rig last year's polls, has now localized its operations. He claimed that the company is now training Zimbabwe on how to subvert the will of the people operating from the KG6.
They are training local operatives at KGC so that they continue the Nikov program. We are also aware of 14-year-olds who are now being registered, because by the time we go to 2018, they will be 18 years. All those are shenanigans that ZANU-PF is already putting in place before the next election.
However, some Harare residents, such as Paidamoyo Mija, said the decision by the MDCT to withdraw its dialogue proposal showed that the opposition party has no clear agenda.
I think actually it shows that they're a confused party, because it does not make sense to withdraw from a dialogue that you were never invited for in the first place and which you yourself proposed. So basically I think the MDC has run out of ideas of what to do.
Political analyst and media center director Ernest Mudzengi tells Studio 7 that the MDC's decision is an opportunity to resolve the country's problems that has been lost.
The reforms that MDC president is calling for can still be undertaken within the context of national dialogue. I think they would best be undertaken within that context.
As a result, Mudzengi says he does not see ZANU-PF implementing key democratic reforms on its own after failing to do so during the lifetime of the government of national unity.
Yeah, obviously ZANU-PF may not implement this as long as the MDC calls for them from what ZANU-PF may consider to be a position of political arrogance.
Meanwhile, ZANU-PF national spokesperson Rugare Gumbo said ZANU-PF will not lose sleep because of the MDC's move, insisting the ruling party won freely and fairly in last year's elections. Gumbo said his party is now concentrating on delivering on its election promises through implementing the country's new economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIMASSET. Gumbo said there is no need for dialogue in the country, adding the fact that the Victoria Falls SADC summit that ended Sunday did not discuss Zimbabwe's domestic issues, meaning that there was no problem in the country. In other news, seven MDC activists who were granted bail by a Harare magistrate today will remain in prison after the state invoked Section 121 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act. The activists, who include proportional representation legislator Ronia Bunjira, were arrested Tuesday following a demonstration for jobs that was organized by the opposition party's youth wing. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
For Perspective, VOA's Ntungameli Nkomo reached political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda, a lecturer in political studies at the Huddersfield University in England.
I think that it is very important to realize that historically any political party that says that it will not partake in elections without the option of another political process, including an insurrection or war or such or anything of the sort, is literally closing doors for business within its quarters. And I think that such a statement is an indication that Tsvangirai feels that he no longer has any influence or any capacity to go forward, but will not at the same time accept that perhaps he needs to pass leadership on to somebody else. It doesn't make political sense. It doesn't show any political brain to make demands when you have no bargaining power. Morgan Tsvangirai is not in a position to bargain to enforce ZANU-PF to change the playing field. He had this power a few years ago, not anymore. Now, not even SADC will listen to him. And therefore, he's clear that he's not going to get any changes. And therefore, this is the best way to throw the towel.
That was political commentator Nkululeko Sibanda of the Huddersfield University in the United Kingdom.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
A Chicago lobbyist, Prince Asiel Ben Israel, has been sentenced to 7 months in prison for allegedly violating U.S. sanctions in late 2008 and 2009 by agreeing to assist President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle in efforts to push America to lift economic sanctions against them in exchange for $3.4 million. Ben Israel will report to prison in November. His alleged accomplice, C. Gregory Turner, allegedly met multiple times in the United States and in Africa with Zimbabwean government officials, including Mr. Mugabe and then Central Bank Chief Gideon Gono and others who were individually subject to U.S. sanctions. According to the FBI, during these meetings, Ben Israel and Turner allegedly agreed to engage in public relations, political consulting, and lobbying to have sanctions removed by meeting with and attempting to persuade U.S. federal and state government officials, including Illinois Member of Congress and state legislators, to oppose the sanctions.
The targeted sanctions against Mr. Mugabe and other specifically designated individuals in Zimbabwe were initially imposed in 2003 by President George W. Bush and have been continued annually by President Barack Obama starting in March 2009 through the most recent extension this year. Ben Israel's lawyers had asked the U.S. District Judge Elaine Bucklow for probation, but the judge said the seriousness of the offense warranted some prison time. Federal guidelines had called for up to 16 months behind bars. According to the FBI statement, the two men were paid an initial payment of $90,000 and three subsequent equal installments of over $1 million. Efforts to get a comment from Mr. Mugabe's spokesman, Mr. George Charamba, Mr. Gono, or Foreign Affairs Minister Simbarashe Mbengwegwi were futile as they were not answering their mobile phones. But international relations expert Clifford Mashiri tells the Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the whole incident is embarrassing for Harare.
This is a very interesting development in the sense that it exposes Mugabe's, a dark side in terms of what money he managed to have to put aside for his personal, his spoilings, like he getting people to help him get off sanctions at a time when the country was hard up on, it was having serious problems of foreign currency. In short, we are saying when Zimbabweans were perishing because of shortage of foreign currency, which was needed to buy chemicals for water, like those who were dying of cholera, Mugabe was spending millions or was promising millions to people, for dubious undertakings like the ones that have led to this man to go to prison.
But Mr. Mugabe's backers will argue that this was in the interest of the nation, since his government is blaming the economic troubles on sanctions imposed by the West and America.
Well, it's debatable. Otherwise, to be blunt, there is no direct connection between what Mugabe was doing, and he was doing it clandestinely. And in any case, what he was fighting was, the embargo placed on him from visiting the United States. As far as answering for the illegal, deals which were being done by some of the Zimbabwean firms which were colluding with his regime during the human rights abuses, there is no way he could just buy his way out, by paying some people to say, talk to your Democratic or a Republican congressmen or whoever they are, senators, to get these sanctions lifted. There is no way that would just succeed. These people would have to go through proper United States law and also through their proper, procedures. As a result, what Mugabe was doing was illegal both in the United States and in Zimbabwe.
International relations expert Clifford Mashiri speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from the United Kingdom.
Former Mozambican President Joaquim Chissano says African leaders should not overstay in office as this compromises good governance and democratic reforms in most nations. Mr. Chissano told more than 600 delegates today attending the ongoing 15th Annual General Meeting and Conference of the Southern African Development Community Lawyers Association that some African leaders want to die in office once they are elected by the people. He said this resulted in serious corruption in other countries and lack of transparency in running governments. Mr. Chissano was the Mozambican president from 1986 to 2005. He's credited with transforming the war-torn country into one of the most successful African democracies. He is a recipient of the Mo Ibrahim Award for promoting good governance in Africa. His former counterpart, President Robert Mugabe, has been in power for more than 34 years. The overall meeting and conference theme is strengthening the rule of law and good governance in the SADC region, a call for transparent government and accountable leadership. One of the delegates, Zimbabwe Chimbwa of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that Chissano's remarks were warmly welcomed by the SADC lawyers at the conference, which ends tomorrow.
We've got all the member states represented here. And, you know, we get together each and every year to talk about issues that affect the rule of law and issues around good governance and issues around the legal profession and generally issues affecting the political issues that are of interest to lawyers in the Southern African region.
So what are the issues that we have discussed so far?
Well, the key theme that we're running with this year is centering around issues of rule of law and accountability. And as you can imagine, the key speakers who are here have been hammering on that. The keynote address was given by Honorable Chissano, the former president of Mozambique. And you would know that he's a man who's a giant in the political arena of Africa, and he's a giant in terms of promoting democracy and good governance. And these are the kind of things that was hammering on, issues around what leaders ought to do to ensure that their people live a better life. We talked about issues around accountability, issues about leaders not wanting to leave power and the implication that he has on good governance and accountability. We also had the Minister of Justice, Honorable Mnangagwa, also speaking, and one of the key issues that came out of his speech was his keenness to ensure that the death penalty, at least in Zimbabwe, is eliminated.
That was Zimbabwe Chimbwa of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights speaking with Studio 7 from Victoria Falls.
President Robert Mugabe today officially opened the 104th Harare Agricultural Show, calling for industrialization in the country and for factories to add value to produce. He spoke after touring various stands with exhibits he said were of high-quality products and services. Addressing people in the Glanis Arena, Mr. Mugabe said, quote, "I am delighted by the increased participation of the various government ministries and departments. It goes a long way in understanding the facilitatory role of the government." He said the people need to be educated in employing correct farming methods that result in substantive production. He said generally cotton, sugar and horticultural produce did better than the past season, hoping the trend would continue. He said the Zim asset is about a robust and comprehensive strategy anchored on mutually reinforcing clusters, adding his government is working to ensure it delivers its election promises anchored on Zim asset. Congo Brazzaville First Lady Antoinette Swahosu Ngieso, who accompanied the president and his wife Grace, said she was impressed by the contribution of employees and employers towards the AIDS levy. This was after visiting the National AIDS Council stand at the showgrounds.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know you can listen to web audio replays of our programs on our website and sign up for newsletters in English, Shona and Ndebele?
Visit our site at www.studio7news.com. You can also give us feedback by text message. Our number is 1-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the latest in the Chitungwiza strike saga.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
Tensions appear to be easing in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson, Missouri, after nearly 2 weeks of unrest over a white police officer shooting and killing an armed black teen. For the second straight night yesterday, no major clashes broke out between police and protesters, though police did report at least 5 arrests. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon ordered the removal of the National Guard today, saying the situation had greatly improved with fewer incidents of outside instigators interfering with peaceful protesters and fewer acts of violence.
Nigeria's health minister has confirmed the country's first cases of Ebola in people who did not have direct contact with Patrick Sawyer, an infected Liberian-American who traveled to Lagos from Liberia. Onyepuji Chukwu says the spouses of two Ebola patients who had contact with Sawyer have also become infected. Chukwu said today that the total number of confirmed infections in Nigeria had risen to 14. He said 5 people have died from the virus.
And Ukraine is accusing Russia of conducting a direct invasion on its eastern border as a Russian aid convoy moves into the country without clearance from Ukrainian authorities. Ukraine's foreign ministry made the statement today after the 200-truck convoy began moving following several days of waiting at the border for Ukrainian authorities to inspect the vehicles and their cargo of humanitarian aid.
The hearing of the cases of the 6 suspended Chitungwiza Workers Union leaders by the local authorities' disciplinary committee that was set for yesterday failed to take off after one of the suspended union leaders, Ephraim Katsina of the Zimbabwe Urban Council's Workers Union, objected to the composition of the disciplinary board. Katsina says he objected to the inclusion of Chamber Secretary Priscilla Vengesai and 2 rival unions officials in the board, saying they were biased. Katsina and 5 others were suspended on allegations they incited other workers to go on a 5-day strike. The council is still issuing suspension letters to workers who participated in the strike, with sources saying more than 200 have so far been served with the letters out of about 980 facing the chop. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Chitungwiza municipality officials, but Katsina tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that their disciplinary hearing is now set for Wednesday next week.
Yesterday I was at head office and I was waiting to get into the hearing session. And fortunately or unfortunately, the hearing could not proceed because I raised some points that I said they should be addressed first before I can be examined in that board. The first point that I raised was that one, Miss Priscilla Rengesai was not qualified to be part of the board. Then the second point was that as Zuku, we have about 924 members, as compared to the other 2 unions, which are our rivals, they have a combined number of 750 members. So I say that they should not be members from those 2 unions. I wanted members from Zuku to represent me in that board. Then the third one was that the code of conduct says there should be equal representation in the board. 2 from the management if the number is 2, or 3 from the management if the number is 3, 3 from the workers' representatives. But managers had come, 3 of them, and the workers were just 2. So those are the 3 points that I raised, and that made the whole inquiry to be postponed to next week on Wednesday.
What about the suspension of workers? Is this still going on, and how many have received suspension letters so far?
By yesterday evening, about 230 employees had received their suspension letters. And we are saying that Makunde is just doing that willy-nilly.
There were efforts by the Zimbabwe Urban Council's union to engage the authorities. Has this happened?
No. As you may be aware, Makunde is not always in the office. I also reported this to the Parliament of Zimbabwe. He is not in the office all the time. And because of that, they did not have that meeting. And I don't know why he is now saying to other employees, you absented yourself from work when he is not in the office all the time.
That was suspended Chitungwiza Workers Union leader Ephraim Katsina in Chitungwiza.
As the row over the succession of the late Chief Kaisa Ndiweni of Ntabazi Nduna continues, the installation of his youngest son, Tlantla, as chief, which was scheduled for today, was cancelled and the ceremony turned into a private family meeting to discuss the issue, relatives have confirmed. The cancellation was also announced at the Bulawayo High Court yesterday, where the late chief's eldest son, Joram Kaisa, had filed an urgent application seeking to annul the appointment of his youngest brother as the chief, saying it was in violation of Nguni customs, practice and norms which recognize the eldest son as their rightful heir. As a result, the court has not granted any order. The respondents include local government minister Ignatius Chombo. Both brothers and Minister Chombo have engaged lawyers. The Ndiweni family had flighted advertisements in the press yesterday, inviting the general public to the ceremony.
Nhlanhla, who resided in the United Kingdom, recently arrived in the country to assume the position of chief and is supported by his mother, Agnes, sister Lydia, and family relative, former Bulawayo councillor Wilson Banqinyane Ndiweni. Joram is begged by his other younger brother, Douglas Dumisani, and the local elders referred to as the Nhlambabaloi clan, who forwarded Joram's name to the government. However, the chief's widow, Agnes, is said to have dismissed the elder as commoners, insisting she has the final say. The chief's widow further argues that her eldest son is irresponsible and that it was her late husband's wish that Nhlanhla succeeds him. However, Joram says even if this was true, his elder son Nhlambezi would assume the position, not any of his brothers. Cultural experts have expressed different views on the issue, with some backing the eldest son and others saying tradition can be altered under certain circumstances, as has happened in the past. For perspective on the issue, reporter Standekile Mhlanga spoke to legal expert Kucaca Phulu, who explains how the High Court is likely to handle the case.
So the court will require evidence by people who have expertise in the field. So both parties will bring whatever evidence they have, and the court will listen to that evidence and then evaluate and come up with conclusions. I expect that what is involved now is an interdict. So experts, either elders who know the customs, different variety of experts who must prove their expertise, will be called to give evidence. The person who alleges that the customs are not being followed to bring his witnesses, and he must find experts. The person who is defending will also find experts. And the court itself obviously is quite accomplished at evaluating and assessing the evidence given by parties to a dispute and will come up with a determination. But however, before we go too far, there is a new constitution now, and there is a section that deals with traditional leaders. There is a part that deals with a chapter that deals with traditional leaders. And the chapter of traditional leaders, as far as I can recollect, says that when disputes arise regarding these substantive issues, but on resolving the substantive issues, the proper forum is the Council for Traditional Leaders, and the statute set out in the Constitution.
That was legal expert Kucaca Phulu on the line from Bulawayo.
And now the music of 21-year-old musician Prosper Ndebele, a.k.a. Pronix, and Never Forget You.
Born in society, where the people were better, they lost their other jobs, they're exposed to the poverty. Mama only 18, she had given birth. Chunked in school and raising me, she was on the run. I'm thinking about it now, all the things that she said to me. Your daddy loves you now, don't you ever, ever tell. Born in so much pain, didn't think enough. You better thank him now before he's gone. Push and a press and a party.
ngacisha ngasangana ikhanda ngintwana bembhala amagama amadala aphicwa nabadala. My mama made me do this shit. I swear to God, I'm just proud of her. I'm way too big for my ego. That's why I'm
pushing. That was the Pronix. I never forget you. Please stay tuned. You will have more on Pronix and his music in the Ndebele section. Chris, now we recap today's top stories.
A former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says his party is withdrawing its proposal for national dialogue.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.